Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Well, I mean, shall we just begin?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good. This is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name, as always, is Christian Horn. I have a very special guest on the line, all the way from Scotland, correct?
Yeah, Scotland.
That's right. I actually didn't realize that's where you were originally. And then I checked this morning and I was like, oh, wow. I mean, I thought you were in the UK. I mean, you are in the UK, but I'll shut up now. I'm starting to sound like a stupid American, but I think you understand what I mean. I didn't know exactly where you were. So Scotland is cool.
I'm the same. You have an idea about people based on what they tweet and what you see of them online, and you think like, oh yeah, he's this type of guy and he lives here.
Yeah.
And then you actually sort of look into it and you realize that's all completely wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. But your name is Monty Nero, correct? That is not an alias. That is your, because we haven't actually ever spoken before. And
no.
Monty Nero is your tag on Twitter, and that's how you contacted me. But that is your actual name as well, correct?
Yeah, yeah, that's what all my comics are published under for Marvel and the stuff I did for other companies. That's all Monty Nero. If you want to find my stuff on my website, it's MontyNero.
Nice, nice. Well, thank you for reaching out to me via Twitter. I really appreciate it. I'm not always good at checking social media, as you probably realized. But I appreciate you coming on. And we should just say right off the bat, I mean, I do like to say when people have Kickstarters that are about to launch or have launched, that you have a Kickstarter running. Mm-hmm. By the time this interview debuts, it will be up, correct?
Yeah. It's in Wednesday the 14th.
Nice, 14th of October.
Yes, 7 a.m. EDT.
Nice. And the project is called Frenemies, correct?
Frenemies, The Lost Planet.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's a sci-fi comic.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. The preview that you sent me looks like really fun. It's about 14 pages. I've never really heard of this book before. Is this another chapter in an ongoing story? Is this like a second Kickstarter, or is this the first Kickstarter for this project?
Well, we're doing the first and second issue in this Kickstarter.
Okay.
The artist, Yishan Lee, who I'm working with on this, she's done a lot of work for Top Cow and had books out through Image and also done stuff for DC and Dark Horse.
Nice.
She's a fantastic artist with a sort of manoir style, kind of a little bit manga-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a brilliant artist. I've wanted to work with her for a long time, and she's one of those artists, she's so busy,
mm-hmm.
That you know, you just don't want to bother her, because you're like, you know, obviously you won't have time to draw my comic, but luckily the stars aligned and she did have time, and it's been wonderful working with her.
Yeah, no, I mean, the artwork is really beautiful. It's very nice. I mean, it's always a pleasure to actually open a comic that is solicited to you and be like, oh, this looks wonderful, because that doesn't necessarily happen all the time. I have to say that, you know, just reading the preview of the issue, I mean, it looks like a lot of fun, but the immediate thing that popped into my head, and I don't know if you were exposed to this at all when you were younger was the sort of like Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, the animated show.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah, is definitely an influence. Definitely, yeah, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is the first thing that popped into my head, and obviously, I grew up in the 80s, so I was a huge fan of that animated show. And it's funny, it was one of the things that I've actually, my daughter's a teenager now, but when she was younger, for some reason, she really latched on to that cartoon when she was little. And it was one of those things that she really liked to watch over and over again. I didn't realize how much she would like it when I showed it to her initially. Mm. But yeah, it was one of those things that kept going in the DVD player over and over and over again. So you've got a good start there.
Sweet. Yeah, I find the same with my daughter. She's always watching old stuff.
Yeah.
Kids these days, they watch loads of old stuff because, of course, it's all available to them on, you know, there's like 250 channels available and there's YouTube and whatnot. So they just like a thing. They didn't care when it was made.
Yeah.
They just watched the hell out of it. She knows more about Scooby-Doo than I ever did.
Yeah. We went through a Scooby-Doo phase as well. That's really funny.
Yeah.
That's great. How old is your daughter?
She's 9 now.
9. Oh, wow. Great. Oh, so you're about to breach in the next couple of years into the teenage years. That's great.
Yeah. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. No, it's just precious years, like 9 preteen. Those are great. So why don't we let people know what Frenemies is about? Because, when I opened up the preview, I mean, obviously it takes place, it's a sci-fi comic, it takes place in space, but, you know, and this is more of a compliment than anything else. The lead, it looks like a female-led book. At least there are 3 or 4 female characters on the cover. And they look a little bit like characters that you would see at a convention, like cosplay characters, like dressed up, like that sort of thing. It seems to be edging towards that audience. But beyond them, sort of in this preview, they sort of like end up on a planet and they're looking for something and they get attacked by alien hordes. But I don't know much more about the concept sort of beyond that. They seem like explorers of some kind.
Yeah, it's about 7 friends who are also rivals searching for a mysterious missing planet that will destroy our solar system unless one of them can reach it.
Sure.
So it's a mix of sci-fi and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of thinking more like Flash Gordon. Nice. You mentioned Dungeons and Dragons. The idea with the technology that these aliens, I mean, these aliens made a planet disappear. So this is some serious high-level quantum technology we're dealing with.
Yeah.
But to us, it just looks like dark magic. It just looks like we cannot comprehend the level that they're operating at.
Mm-hmm.
So as they're searching for this missing planet, we sort of focus on how the aliens and the exposure that these people have to their technology transforms them.
Mm-hmm.
So only one of them can reach the lost planet.
Mm-hmm.
So do they cooperate with each other to make sure one of them makes it and saves the solar system, or do they subtly fuck each other up? Or do they do both? Is your best friend your worst enemy when, you know, there's so much at stake?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of central premise of the comic. And then within that, to me, that's like a really fresh premise. It's really exciting. There's some really vibrant interplay between these characters. They're all very different.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that's read my stuff will know it tends to be a little bit crazy. it's like adult material, so not gratuitously so, but it's like, you know, 18 plus.
Oh, is it really? Because from the preview, I would not have guessed that. This seems more teen-oriented book.
There's a lot of fun action. I mean, all my stuff is enormous fun. So there's just a lot of fun action. There's a lot of laser blasting. There's a lot of everything you want from a science fiction series.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be more than that. Otherwise, it's just like, Jesus, I've seen this before. You know, I've seen so many sci-fis like this. So there has to be a lot more to that.
Sure.
So it's this mix. It's what I'm really happy with is I think we've really cracked this balance between delivering what everybody wants, which is like all the laser blasting and the alien fights and the daring do, the cliffhangers, you know, all the stuff that I love about old sci-fi.
Yeah.
But then we've mixed in loads of progressive new ideas and forward-thinking things, and not just in the characters, but also the plot dynamics and the a lot about the sci-fi world that we've fleshed out. When you learn more about it, you'll realize that it's like some quite deep concepts there about how different universes might coexist and how planets might be made to disappear and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, we brought a lot of innovation to the Kickstarter itself. So I don't know if you've seen any of that stuff.
No, not necessarily. What sort of innovations are we talking about? Like what?
Right. Well, the Kickstarter is folded into the fictional universe of the comic.
Oh, really?
So every update on the Kickstarter is another piece of story in the comic, in the world of the comic. So obviously you've got your story in the comic. You've got, I think it's 52 pages in total that the two issues make. So you've got a lot of excellent art and story and, you know, dialogue and cliffhangers and everything you want from a comic in that. But then also, as the campaign runs, so every day you get a new piece of story, which expands on what's in the comic and sheds new light and insight into it and new light into the characters, events that you think you see one version of in the comic. You then realize, oh, actually, is that quite how it happened when you see something else that happens in the Kickstarter? So every update expands the world. You learn more about the characters, and it's just like a really fun way to move Kickstarter forward, really, to be like an entertainment, be like a storytelling medium. Every day you get a new bit of story. And I think we're all fed up of like scrolling through the same old shit on, you know, Twitter and Facebook. So it's really nice to get some positive, fun, exciting story updates, you know. And as soon as you sign up for the Kickstarter, you get all this stuff, you know. If you've backed the comic, this stuff just arrives. So you don't have to do anything special to get it or anything. It's just like you back the comic and you get all this extra stuff too.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, that sounds like a really smart way of getting people involved in your Kickstarter, because I mean, I've supported a lot, several Kickstarters, and I mean, this is a very unique way of sort of approaching it, where you sort of make it part of the story. Is this something you came up with yourself? Like just an idea you had where it was like, I need to make this. That's amazing.
I'm a storyteller. You know, I love being creative. So anything that it does not involve me telling stories or being creative, you know, it's not how I want to be spending my time. So it's like, I think it's the 8th Kickstarter that we've done. So the others were, you know, different projects and so forth. And you get what surprised me when I started doing Kickstarters. The first one I did, I thought like, oh, you know, people are going to come onto the site. They're going to back the comic and then they're going to disappear and they're going to wait for the comic to arrive, you know. And very grateful for them to be doing that. But very quickly realized that no, people want to hang out on the site. They want to talk to you. They want to know more. They want to interact. They want to know more about the characters. They want to know more about the world. And really, a lot of them, it's like an entertaining thing for them to do online. You know, they want to be part of this. And that's the attraction of crowdfunding, is it's not just like someone delivers a comic and you pick it up and read it. You have that contact with the creators. And you feel like part of the team because, you know, you're backing the comic on a personal level and you're getting special stuff that no one else is getting. So it's really just an extension of that. And, you know, having done so many of them now and got the hang of it, you just think like, well, I'm sure if I did this, people would get it. You know what I mean? So I was writing the fictional, you know, world, the story on the, as soon as you go on the Kickstarter page, it's straight into this story. And I was just thinking like, oh man, imagine if someone misunderstands this and they think that I genuinely am a drunk Russian lab technician trying to fundraise, building money for a new laboratory to contact with people in deep space.
I mean,
there is the possibility, I suppose, that somebody could come onto the site who's
never
experienced Kickstarter and misunderstand it. But I think people are going to get it. I've kind of hopefully struck a good balance between You know, making it part of the fictional world of the comic, but also making it clear what's going on.
Sure. And will elements of sort of the story on Kickstarter end up like in the final book? Like, are those going to be like extras? Am I misunderstanding? Like, are they integral parts
of it? At the moment, based on the comics that you'll get the two comics.
Yeah.
Which is 52 pages of you know, art and dialogue and so forth.
Yeah.
So everything in the Kickstarter will be a bonus to that.
Mm-hmm.
But things that are in this Kickstarter as updates, they'll, in future versions of the comics, we'll see the same scenes and we'll see the same characters, but we'll see them from a different angle, because that's the beauty of having seven characters.
Yeah.
Is like you can flit around between the view of what these people are seeing and experiencing, and how they, you can see the same things happen, but you just have a different take on it because you're a different person with different information.
Sure.
So you might see a scene in the update from one person's point of view, and then you see it later on in the comic, say in issue 3 or 4,
yeah,
with from another person's point of view. But that puts a whole new spin on it.
Yeah.
And you realize that it wasn't quite as simple as it appeared in the first instance, and actually there's something deeper going on. All these characters have secrets. They're all up to something,
mm-hmm,
and they've all got an agenda, whether it's obvious at the beginning or not.
Yeah.
And what I like about the preview that you can read on the comic pages that you can read on the site, and that you read, is it kind of throws you straight in.
Yeah.
So you're straight into this world and this action straight away, and but you still get a sense of the characters being different and them sparking off each other. And as you read more, you just learn more and more about what's really going on with each of these characters, and you find out more and more about their relationships and their history and all that kind of good stuff.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and that was one of the things that I was interested in asking, because, and that's why I was wondering if this was the sort of like first chapter or there had been Kickstarters before, because you are kind of just dropped into the story. And I was like, wait, did I miss something? Is there something that I, but it sounds like that's the beginning of the story. Like, you're sort of like, it begins, and which I also like too. I mean, you know, there's also an aspect of like, how many times do I have to watch Batman's parents get shot to, like, you know, get it? Like, you know what I mean? So, I mean, yeah, you know, or Superman get launched in a spaceship into outer space. Like, we all understand that. So there's definitely an appreciation for a different sort of storytelling that just like begins with the characters. And then as it goes on, you will figure out like what's happening. And that it sounds like that's the sort of story that you're telling, or at least that's how you open up.
Yeah, that's the way I always like to write. I mean, mm-hmm, it doesn't matter which issue you start with. If you start with issue 1 or 2, you can understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's that art of it used to be very common in comic storytelling, was you could pick up an issue,
yeah,
and it would be part of a bigger story, but you could still understand who the characters were.
Sure.
There'd be little moments in each issue where you'd sort of get a sense of who the characters were and what they could do and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been lost in the push towards,
yep,
graphic novel kind of storytelling. And I think that's a shame, because, you know, a lot of those old comics were brilliant.
Yeah.
And you can still do sophisticated long-term world building and also have comics where it doesn't matter, you know, what issue you come to it, you can still feel part of it and you can understand what's going on.
Sure.
So it's got a lot to do with the pace of the storytelling. I don't like decompressed comics. I like comics where you get a lot of action and stuff going on,
mm-hmm,
you know, within the 22 pages or however long it is. So yeah, it's kind of like that balance, isn't it? Getting that balance.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I noticed, and what I love, obviously being the parent of a young girl, is that the four female characters are, you know, on the cover. But I also noticed, yeah, that in the introduction of the book, there seem to be two male characters traveling with them. And so,
three.
Oh, three. Oh, okay. Male. Yeah. Yep. Okay. I read it a little while. Oh yeah. I see three. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, it seems like there's three characters. And then on the, on your Twitter page, one of the things you have there is equality enthusiast, which I love. I think that's, you know, fantastic. I mean, we should all be that. We should all have that on our Twitter page. But it's interesting to me because the, what leads me to believe is a female-centric book is a little bit more than that. Because again, like I said, there's male characters. Do you want to speak to any of the characters that you have? Because I mean, they're all beautifully designed and they look, you know, really intriguing. And I like I said, I love the art. So because it looks like you've got like a goth, and then there's one that's dressed like a warrior sort of woman, and she's got like a crown, and then one with wings, and you know, I mean, they're all sort of. But it seems to me, like looking at this first issue, that the book would be more about them. Is that true? Are they more like the leads of the book? Yeah,
it's not that the women are more important than the men. There's there's seven characters, and they all get. They all get their time in the spotlight, and they all get. It's one of the things I wanted to explore. Is the books I've written before have always had one kind of protagonist, and you kind of basically see most of the action from their point of view. Mm-hmm. And that's quite an easy thing to plot. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I really wanted to do was how do you plot and give characters, you know, their make them fully rounded and give them their time in the spotlight when you've got like, you know, a team of people, or you've got in this case seven people.
Yeah.
How does that work? And how can you do that in an elegant way that doesn't feel crowded or kind of like you're not getting you know, you're getting bogged down in anything. So it's quite an art to doing that. And as a writer, I'm always trying to push myself and try and explore new things and understand more about how writing works and how comics work. And that's always what I'm trying to do with all my stuff, is I'm trying to like push myself, and hopefully if I do that, then people will also find it interesting. Mm-hmm. So one of the films that I really liked, which was the first Avengers film, and the script for that just blew me away, because obviously you've got, you know, so many characters in that film.
Yeah.
And they've all got to be introduced, and you've got to know their personalities, and you've got to know what they can do, and you've got to get a clear sense of self, but also not get bogged down explaining it all and introducing them all.
Yeah.
And it was just so elegantly put together as far as how, even right from the beginning, right through to the end in the action sequences, you've still got a massive sense of story with each character. It wasn't just mindless action. Every time they did something, you learned more about them and their kind of interplay. It was just a really well-written piece of screenplay. So I wanted to do something, you know, that sort of good. Not the same. It's not the same tone or anything, but it's just as a sort of creative challenge to write something sort of that well-balanced. So yeah, it took a while. I mean, it took a bit of figuring out, but I think we've got there in the end.
Yeah,
and I'm very happy with how it's working now.
Sure.
So basically, you've got seven characters. You've got Kai. Mm-hmm. She's Chinese, a mysterious sexual adventurer. She's got a very dark secret. She seems to be very nice. She's very nice to everybody. Mm-hmm. She gets on well with everybody, but there's definitely something sinister going on. And it seems to revolve around another character who's called Professor Min Young, who is a wildly eccentric kind of English explorer, punk. She's a lesbian. She's a professor of art history. She sort of moonlights as a paranormal investigator.
Uh-huh.
So even while she's working on her glittering academic career, she's still sort of getting involved in these slightly shady kind of areas. A lot of it relates to her work as an art historian. So she's sort of like going into sort of dubious kind of territories and recovering, you know, ancient artifacts, and adventures arise from those. So she's got a very difficult relationship with her son, who's another character called Sunny, who's the youngest character. So she's about 36, 37. And Sunny's about 18.
Okay.
And so she's a professor at the university, and he's like a brilliant sort of student at the university. and she's got by far the most experience of like extra normal phenomena and, you know, things that are out of the ordinary. So when all this alien shit starts happening, she's definitely the one that can deal with it the best. Mm-hmm. But there's other people in the group that think they're in charge or think they know the best.
Sure.
So you get this conflict as to who's leading the group and why. So Sonny, her son, he's the youngest character. He's like a shy child prodigy. He's half English and half South Korean. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really know his father at all. And he's got this very strained relationship with his mother, who's always off doing stuff, you know. So he's the least confident member of the group, but he's got like the sharpest mind. Mm-hmm. And he designed this scanner that they use to try and track down the aliens. And he's also utterly in love with Delphine, who's the blonde character on the cover. She's older than him, and she's a French philosopher and a cosplay queen.
Yeah.
So she therefore is quite pretentious, and she thinks he's superior to everybody else because she has a deeper insight into it on a philosophical level. So she dates Sonny, but she's sort of like kind of like treats him like her favorite pet rather than, you know, like as you treat your wife or your husband or something.
Sure.
And she's definitely likes to win. She's very much someone that likes to win whatever she does.
She's competitive.
So, she's competitive, yeah. So then you've got Carlton. He's the professor of mathematics at Camford University. He is the oldest member of the group, and he is searching for his son who went missing in a comic shop in 1996 in very, very, very mysterious circumstances. Oh,
my wife says that all the time whenever we go to a comic shop. That is, is not a...
A lot of people can relate.
Yeah.
So he's very single-minded, and a lot of his work in astrophysics and exploring the possibilities of other universes existing within our universe, within the dark matter within our universe, he is driven by this quest to sort of explain why his son disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So his motives are good, but because he's so driven to find his son, he often goes too far with some quite alarming consequences for the others.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Hunter, who's very rich, he's very handsome, he's like a sort of Flash Gordon type character, but he's like awful, he's like Charlie Sheen. He loves himself. He's very much the sort of two-fisted sort of hero.
Uh-huh.
So he can be useful at times, but he thinks he's the alpha male, which often causes problems because he's not the brightest in the bunch. Yeah. You get the idea, he might have bought a lot of his academic credentials to get him at this university in the first place. And Jamelia. Jamelia's she's a bisexual genius from Ireland who thinks she has the answer for everything, but she's very quixotic. So she has a very sort of idealistic view of the world and doing the right thing. And she won't compromise on that.
Yeah.
Which makes it very awkward sometimes when you have to be a bit more practical and cooperate with other people. But she's very steely, and she's quite powerful. So she might just succeed where all the others kind of fail in the quest to reach the lost planet.
Interesting. No, that's a great bunch of characters. I think I noticed, is the Flash Gordon guy not wearing a shirt?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Then I also love how Charlie Sheen has become the international symbol for awfulness. Like, it's so great. It's so great that would be like you say Charlie Sheen and it's like, I get it. Like, you don't have to say anything else. It's great.
Yeah.
God bless America. It's so funny giving us things like Charlie Sheen. Those all sound like really fun and interesting characters. I mean, I love how many of your characters seem to be based on intellect or having an education or being educated. Like, that seems to me to have been like a focus that you went to. And I mean, can you speak to that at all? Because
I thought
it sounds interesting.
Yeah, because I watch a lot of stuff with my daughter and with my wife, and a lot of times you see dramas about young people, different, you know. And the advantage of that is you've got, you know, people from all kinds of backgrounds, and they're all mixed together because they're at some school or something. But I was quite interested. You never see stuff about people that are slightly older at university. So when you get to sort of postgraduate level at universities, you get like an incredible mix of people from all around the world, and you get, you know, very young people who are super bright and have come up really quickly through the system. But then you get other people who are like, you know, 30 or 50 or older, and they're on the same course, doing the same thing at the same level, and they've got totally different worldviews. And obviously, if you're looking for a good story, you're looking for a lot of conflict. So, and you're looking for people that, you know, even though they're intelligent, considerate, well-meaning people, they just don't agree with what someone else thinks about something. And normally, you can just sort of skirt around that. But if you're stuck in space with them and you've got some really critical thing to do, suddenly this becomes a massive sort of conflict and a bone of contention. So, with dialogue, you want very distinct people. You want distinct voices. So each time you see a balloon, you can see and tell who is speaking and what their kind of type of personality is. And you want it to be naturalistic, but then you also want them to approach things in a different way, so that you get sort of, you know, that's what makes good dialogue. If everybody thinks the same way and sounds the same way, it's just there's nothing happening in the dialogue or the scene. It's just a really flat scene. And you see stuff like that all the time. You watch scenes on TV and you're thinking like, this, a scene will just end, and you'll think like, well, just nothing happened in that scene, and that was just really weird. That sort of just stopped, and it's because there's no conflict and there's no sort of change in how anybody thought during the scene. And you've got to have that in a scene. You've got to have that conflict, and you've got to have that sense of one person is changing another person's mind, or one person is changing the situation, so that by the time we leave the scene, something has actually happened, and you feel like you've moved the story forward. So, that's a key part to everything that I write. You've got to have that in every scene. And like I say, I like to have a lot of stuff in a comic. I mean, it's like there's an art to it. It's very spacious, isn't it? I mean, you read the comic, it doesn't feel rushed or cramped. You've got plenty of like big sort of widescreen double page spreads and sort of single image sort of stuff. But then you've also got lots of, you know, rat-a-tat dialogue and lots of action in the panels, you know, of people shooting or fighting or whatever they're doing. And at the same time, you're hopefully learning something about them and about the situation they're in. And like the story's always moving forward, because that's always what you want to do when you're writing a good comic.
Tell me a little bit about this villainess that you have. I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce the name. Marchioness?
The Marchioness,
Marchioness. Okay, gotcha.
The Marchioness in history, the Marchioness is the wife of a you know a mar she's like just a noble person, basically. There's loads of those throughout British history. So it's like the society, the alien culture that she comes from is like sort of like royalty, but also it's very sort of it's a royalty where all the women in the society are treated equally, and so almost like a sort of queen bee hive type mentality, where as long as they're sort of swearing fealty to the queen, or the whoever the representative of the royalty on that particular mission is, in this case the Marchioness, then she'll look after them, and they'll get rewarded, and they'll all get treated well. They'll get treated equally. So it's kind of like quite an interesting culture. There's some other stuff, a bit too complex to get into now, about how their society kind of functions. It's one of those things where you've thought it through so deeply that if you just, you know, if you talked about it for 10 minutes, it would just bore people's ass off. But that hopefully is, you know, it's because you've thought all that stuff through, as they talk to each other and as stuff happens, you sort of get a sense of there being a real kind of thought through sci-fi world there that you've not seen before, sort of way of existing and a way of sort of coping with stuff. in their quest. So they're also after the Eye of Stars. The Eye of Stars is a device that will get you to other places in the universe. And obviously what everyone's after, the Marchioness and the Frenemies, they're both after this lost planet to try and find this technology, this powerful technology that can make planets disappear and destroy solar systems.
Gotcha.
So they're sort of in competition. So what we were really wanting to do was design like a fresh, scary, badass villain who is like a bit like I said before, you want to tick a load of boxes about what people want from a sci-fi villain, sci-fi fantasy villain, but you also want it to be new and have interesting elements and to sort of surprise people a bit. So I think we're really, I'm really happy with the way she looks.
Yeah, the design I was going to say is really... really cool. Is that something that you came up with, or is it started?
Yeah, I actually designed that one.
Nice. Because you're an artist as well.
Yeah, yeah. So with Yishan, I mean, I wanted to work with her because I knew if I just said, look, this is the sort of character I want them wearing these kind of clothes and doing this sort of vibe, she'd just come back straight away with some brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Way better than I could do. And that's what she did with the seven main characters. With the villain, I did the same thing. I described the villain and she came back with some designs and they just weren't quite what I wanted. So in the end, I just thought, right, well, I'll just do some concepts. So I did a couple of concepts, sent them over to her, and luckily she really liked them. She thought they were really strong. So she went with those. Mm. So yeah, she's absolutely fearsome. She's got this kind of like skin tight bodysuit on with this sort of high tech kind of like webbing through it, and then like a visor, so you can only see a mouth and a bit of a nose. And then she's got this weird sort of flowy living cloak that it's got like tendrils coming off it, like six tendrils that we'll get into this later. They kind of actually have like mouths like on the end of the tendrils, so they can sort of it's sort of like a cross between, if you imagine like a hand that had a mouth in the palm, but it was more sort of like reptilian. So they can sort of grip things but also eat things, so they could grip your face but then eat it. So she's got these six like tendrils that are always like wafting around her in a very sort of scary and unsettling way.
Yeah.
And she, first thing she does is just like show what a badass motherfucker she is. So she's like straight into combat. She's wielding like six laser swords. She's like cutting heads off left, right and center. Dialogue is hopefully like really cool and impressive. So, and you get a sense straight away of who she is and what she's after. And but she's not two-dimensional. She's got in her eyes, she's like, you know, no one thinks they're the villain of their own story. Do you know what I mean? In her eyes, she's looking after her people. She's doing something for the good of the universe as she understands it. And if you know, thousands of rebels and naysayers have to die as a result, you know, that's not her problem. They could just surrender if they want it.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. There's about three or four characters in this thing where you just think, oh, these people could definitely just have their own solo book.
Yeah.
And it would be amazing. And she's turned out to be one of them. She's at the moment, because she's the newest character.
Yeah.
We only started working on her with issue two. We introduced her in issue two. We're just really excited by her and how she's turned out and all the stuff she's doing and what we've got lined up for her in the series.
Well, it's definitely a great reveal in this preview because it's like out of nowhere. And it's funny because the design could be sort of like very typical villain, but adding the swords and the tentacles and stuff like that, that definitely gets your, you know, it's very much like, oh, wait, there's something different here. And it's funny because it's sexy, but disturbing at the same time.
That's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
Disturbing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. It's just sort of just like, and then she goes into action and it's like, oh yeah, okay, I'll be over here. You know, don't
stand back.
Yeah. Yeah. Stand back. So you say this is going to be your eighth Kickstarter, eighth or ninth?
I think it's eighth. I think it's my eighth one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but this is the first one for this series, right?
No, we did one for the first issue.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But it was about a year ago.
Uh-huh.
And because Yishan's so busy and sure. I was busy as well because, you know, we both write stuff professionally.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to wait until we could focus on it like fully and deliver like the full experience to people in a sort of timely way. So yeah. Initially we're working towards like a 4-issue arc.
Oh, nice.
That you can read, you know, like all my stuff, you should be able to get a sense of completion and sort of satisfaction from reading the 4 issues.
Yeah.
But the way we see this is like, you know, we want to be working on this for 20 years or so.
Uh-huh.
And the sort of depth of the universe and the characters and the arcs for everybody that we worked out is like can go that long. But it's like anything. It's like you can make this stuff, but if people don't want it, if they don't come and buy it, if they don't back it, then, you know, there's no practical way you can keep making it. So
sure.
It's sort of we have to see how the next year. We're definitely doing 4 issues.
Yeah.
So we're having like a big push now to do the first 2 issues and to get everybody on board with those. And we've just been developing it. I mean, even since the first issue, we've developed it a lot and sort of improved on it a lot and pushed it exactly where I want it to be now, I think.
Mm.
Initially I was trying some stuff. Like, I was very interested, you know, I love sci-fi. I love all kinds of sci-fi, you know, novels and radio and TV and movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And initially in the first series, I was thinking like, oh, I want to get some sort of movie type sci-fi stuff in there. But I found when I was trying to write that in the comic, it was just a bit dull.
Uh-huh.
Something about, I mean, comics and films are very different mediums. So things that would move you in like a film, like say like a 2000 AD type moment.
Yeah.
A 2001 A Space Odyssey type moment.
Yeah.
It's all to do with like the beauty of the cinematography and the pace of it and the music and stuff. And you get really kind of moved by something that's happening.
Yeah.
But in a comic, you could write something with the same sense of awe or pace and trying to get the same sense of majesty and wonder. But it just felt a little bit flat. It just wasn't really quite working as I wanted it to. Because you want something that moves people as well as those things do, but in a different way. You know,
sure.
You're not copying, but you want to get the same, evoke the same feelings in people.
Sure.
So, a lot of the things I tried initially didn't quite work as I'd hoped. So there were things that ended up in the comic. I mean, by the time we'd got the comic ready, I'd sort of figured out, you know, what was going to work.
Mm.
And it's really just going back to the basics of what works well in all my comics, which is, like I said before, it's like, you know, real pacey kind of action and then really well thought through characters that kind of develop naturally just through talking to each other. So you get a sense of who they are just by listening. And I think that's how we experience the world, isn't it? I mean, as soon as you talk to someone, within like usually with about a minute, you've got a pretty sort of clear idea of what kind of person they are.
Sure.
And first impression. Where they might be coming from, you know, what, you know, in the world, what their story might be. And sometimes you can be surprised and confounded as you get to know them better, but
yeah,
a lot of times you that first impression you get, it's like a handle that you hang on someone.
Sure.
And it sort of serves you well throughout your relationship with them. It's trying to keep that sense of reality, but in a very sort of science fiction fantasy setting.
Sure. Let me ask you this. I mean, you've done several Kickstarters and stuff. Is this something you ever wanted to go to a publisher with? Or is this the sort of thing where, I mean, I know how comics sort of work with publishers, where you have to have the whole thing sort of complete before you would go to a publisher? Or because, I mean, you've worked for, you know, big companies. I mean, Titan and Dark Horse and Marvel and stuff like that. So why not just pitch this project directly to a publisher? Or do you just prefer the Kickstarter method of doing comics?
I like the Kickstarter method because you can, like I said, you can explore things that interest you and you can nail stuff down until it's exactly the way you want it.
Yeah.
So that to me makes for a better comic.
Yeah.
Because all you're trying to do is make the best comics possible.
Yeah.
But now I think, I mean, I've not done anything about this yet, and I'm not going to do anything about it until after we finish this Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
But we've now got it to a place where I feel really fucking proud of it. And, you know, like it's like the best thing ever in this kind of sphere of science fiction comics.
Sure.
So definitely it's a certain genre and tone of science fiction. Like, I also love like sort of, you know, hard sci-fi and sort of, you know, sort of noir cyberpunk. And it's not that kind of thing. It's like very much a sort of exciting action sci-fi fantasy. Mm-hmm. So it's very entertaining. But like I say, it's also like for adults. So there's stuff in it that you definitely don't want to read if you're under 18 that will crop up later in the series. And
that's so interesting to me, because the preview that you've given me, I mean, would give me, like I said earlier, no indication that
yeah.
you have to be over 18 to sort of read this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, again, sorry to interrupt, but I mean, I just find that fascinating because the preview makes me think, oh, eventually this will be something I can hand off to my 13-year-old. But I guess you're saying not to do that.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think it's just to do with the, you treat the scene with the appropriate level of respect that it deserves in mm-hmm. the initial scene, it's an action scene.
Yeah.
You know, they've arrived on this strange planet and they suddenly find themselves attacked from two different sides by two different alien cultures that are apparently involved in something that they don't understand, and they have to kind of protect themselves and fight back and figure out what the fuck's going on.
So
in that situation, I mean, obviously there's the language, there's some swearing and stuff, because I think naturally in that situation you would be swearing like a bastard about what the fuck's going on here. And then they're just running, they're trying to protect themselves, they're trying to think on their feet, they're trying to fight back. So in that situation, you know, that's what there's space for. Mm-hmm. Later on, there's kind of like, you know, quieter moments where the sort of characters can start to interact. So then it's more appropriate to get into like, you know, personal relationships. And then obviously you get into sexual relationships. Mm-hmm. And because there's a wide range of characters, you know, there's like some straights, there's some bisexuals, there's some gays, there's some lesbians. So you've got like all this kind of possibility for how their sexual lives might play out. Mm-hmm. Plus, of course, you've got the aliens that they meet. There are all kinds of like, you know, from all kinds of different sexualities and so forth across the universe.
Sure.
So you've got that. Then, of course, you've got more of the sort of scary elements that come in later in the story. Mm-hmm. They're each just played as you would naturally expect that to be encountered by an adult. So there's nothing that happens in the comic that doesn't happen within, you know, the lives of you know, anyone over 18.
Sure.
But you know, any broad-minded adult over 18. So there's nothing like gratuitously sort of trying to seek out any controversy. But it's just, I like to make my characters real.
Yeah.
I like them to do things that adults would do in that situation. And I think if you were stuck in space for a week, one of the things that would happen is you'd get very horny. And you'd feel the need for like human contact, you sure. know? So there's a lot of sex in later parts of the story, but you know, where it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Where it seems to make sense in rounding out the characters and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a mix. It's a real mix.
And do you find that maybe that 18 plus handle or thing might limit you in any way, or has it limited your audience at all? Or do you feel, because no, I know in the US sometimes, like even in comic shops, like if, I mean, I, there's like saying 18 plus and then there's like, oh, this is a little bit more mature. Obviously in the US, violence is more acceptable than sex for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that hasn't hurt you, or it hasn't made you concerned about finding an audience or reaching a broader audience or anything like that?
No, I don't think in those terms. I just write stuff that I want to read.
Sure.
And I want to read stuff that, you know, is for an adult and is sort of sophisticated, but also fun and entertaining and funny. I mean, all my stuff's hopefully quite funny. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, I just want to be entertained. You know what I mean? And I want to see new things. I want to see new experiences. I don't want to see the same old stories and the same old scenarios and the same old characters. So that's how I'm just really trying to write something that excites the hell out of me, that I would want to read as an adult man. And I figure that if I'm entertained by it and excited by it, then hopefully other people will be too. And that's the way it's always gone with my stuff. But I've always written stuff for adults that I want to read, and as a result, it's always found an audience that get quite enthusiastic about it. And it's not necessarily the broadest audience in the world, but I don't really want the broadest audience in the world. I want just people. If you can find people that are passionate about the same things you're passionate about, then that's a wonderful thing. I think that's like magic. It's like, I've met so many people, people like yourself, people all across the world, who kind of like are on a similar wavelength to me. And it's because we're sort of joined by this sort of love and appreciation for comics and for certain types of comics and certain types of characters. And I just think that's, I mean, what more do you need? I don't need anything more than that. I don't want to be, I don't, I'm not in this to be rich or a celebrity or anything. I just want to write fantastic comics and create fantastic comics. And I want people that want to read them. I want to, share it with them and share the enthusiasm for it and the excitement for it. And that's really all I'm looking to do. And hopefully people will get into it on that basis.
Well, no, I mean, that's a great way to go about it. I mean, I know that over here, there's and I've said it before on this podcast that there's so many times where it's just like, oh, this was a script that I had for a movie, or this was a thing that I had for a TV show. And it's just like, and I appreciate that. I mean, everyone's got to pay the bills and, and stuff like that. But it just seems like the art form of comics has become just a launching pad for something else, and it's always kind of refreshing. I mean, I'm sure that if somebody was like, hey, Frenemies, I want to make it like a multi-billion dollar, like franchise, like, of course. Yes, I mean, but it's always nice to hear that that is not sort of the end intent. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of refreshing in a way because again, everyone's got to pay the bills, no judgment. Do it, do make comics, good comics, however you want to make them for whatever reason, but it's just it's nice to hear that. But saying that you want to read stuff that you would want to read yourself, what sort of comics do you like? I mean, let's wrap it up with that. I mean, if this is the sort of the if you've created the sort of thing that you want to read, what stuff do you like to read so fans can be like, oh yeah, I like what this guy's into, I'll check his stuff out.
I liked comics wise with sci-fi. I really liked You Only See Them Where They're Dead recently, which is the Al Ewing sci-fi comic.
What's it called?
We only see them when they're dead.
I don't think I've read that. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah,
I'll have to
it's
check that
excellent.
out.
He's very good at getting a sense of like epic scale to what he does. There's a few. It's quite similar to some of the cosmic Marvel stuff he's been writing. Yeah, he's one of my favorite writers, and he always thinks through a world very thoroughly, which is something I like from a comic. I don't like you, I don't like things that are just glib. Oh, this is going to be a TV series, and you can tell that someone's dashed it off in like a couple of days. I don't like reading anything like that. I like reading something that's kind of like something, a labor of love, something someone's really poured their heart into and really thought through really thoroughly. I really liked Saga as a sci-fi epic. I thought that was really good. Some really innovative art and some interesting characters and some unexpected developments and how the sort of characters went on. Yeah, sci-fi wise. But also like I love the old Flash Gordon sci-fi comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Alex Raymond stuff.
Oh, that's great.
I wanted to get a lot of that into it as well. That sense of adventure and the cliffhangers and the sort of the heroes and villains and the thrill, the simple thrills. I think there's a lot to be done with the simple thrill of exploring the universe. Something that I find lacking in a lot of space comics is there's no sense of wonder. And like I said, that was the first thing that I was trying to get into it by kind of channeling this sort of 2001 A Space Odyssey type vibe.
Yeah.
But it didn't work initially using movie techniques. But it's more just about, I found that it's more just about really great writing and using prose, using the text. So you get some stunning visuals, you know, of the cosmos and some interesting sci-fi kind of some sort of art.
Yeah.
But then you've got to really just conjure, how does it feel to stand there and witness this? Or how does it feel to be sort of transported across the galaxy? What does it smell like? You know, how does it make you your bones feel? You know, what does it taste like to be standing there looking at a supernova as it explodes? All that kind of stuff. You want to, it's really just about the writing at that stage and finding ways to make it fresh and to make it real and to transport someone from, you know, their living room or wherever they're reading the comic to, you know, a galaxy a million light years across from where we are at the moment. So
yeah,
it's been a lot of fun exploring that kind of stuff.
That's great, because one of the things that I always complain about is seeing movies where aliens come out of the sky or something and everyone's just like, okay, let's go fight the aliens, instead of being like, oh my god, there's aliens, like, what the hell? You know what I mean? Like, there's no sort of like first awe filled reaction. And it's funny because one of my favorite runs of comics back in the day was like John Byrne's Fantastic Four, and you're talking about space, they explore like the negative zone, and these are people that have seen, you know, things, right? Like Galactus, of course, but there's still this sense of like, you know, John Byrne during that run instilled, you know, at least Mr. Fantastic, you know, to talk superhero comics, with this curiosity and, you know, and this desire to explore, and the others were sort of like normal people who were just like, oh my God, like, what did we just see? You know, and sort of like dumbfounded with their surroundings. So I totally understand what you're talking about. It is a huge pet peeve of mine whenever I see, you know, and unfortunately it seems like Michael Bay movies tend to do this a lot, or like that sort of thing where it's just like the hero just steps up and it's like, you know, or he has a little moment of doubt, but for the most part you'd be kind of crapping yourself and like, oh my God, there's like, what are we going to do? You know? So,
I think that's why comics are well placed to do that, because you've got the visuals.
Yeah.
You know, so you can blow people away with the visuals, but then you've also got the text, you've got the words. Yeah. And the words can take you inside someone's feelings and thoughts and emotions and sensations in ways that a film can't. And that's why comics are so powerful, because they mix the best of what books can bring us and what visual medium can bring us. And that's why when you get it right, they're the most, I think they're the most emotive medium you can work in.
Well, that's great. Well, Monty, I really appreciate your time. Thank you, you know, for coming on the show. Are there any last words that you want to say about Frenemies? I mean, again, the project is Frenemies. Look it up on Kickstarter. By the time this goes up, it will be on Kickstarter. Right now we're like several days away, right, from it launching.
Wednesday the 14th at 7 a.m. EDT.
Yeah.
And it's Frenemies, The Lost Planet 1 and 2.
Uh-huh.
That's the title of the Kickstarter.
Great.
And then if you go to my website, which is www.montinero.com, M-O-N-T-Y-N-E-R-O, /Frenemies, then you'll find a bit more information about the comic, and you can, there's links there to take you to other sites that are relevant and to the Kickstarter itself.
Sure. And your Twitter handle is @MontyNero.
All one word.
Montinero. Oh, that's great. Well, thank you. I mean, this project looks great. You know, once it launches, I will get on there to support as well.
Thank you.
You know,
That's pretty kind. Great. I'm glad you like it. Thank you.
Yeah. I tend to support I support so many Kickstarters. It's mostly digital stuff, but I've run out of room for stuff. But this looks like a great project, and you know, I can't wait to read the whole thing. I mean, definitely the preview had me interested, and but now that you're saying that it's 18 and over, I'm like, where is this gonna go? I'm even more interested. But again, any final thoughts or Should we just wrap it up?
I hope you like the updates on the Kickstarter, because obviously that's something new. So
it's a great idea.
I'm as interested to know how it goes as anybody else. But all I can tell you is writing the updates have entertained the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I've been able to include some stuff that I would love to put in the comic that really sort of touches on that stuff we were talking a minute ago about, you know, having a sense of wonder and a sense of there being greater sort of science fiction concepts out there than we can understand at the moment.
Sure.
And as well as being action based, there's also a lot of that in the updates. Mm-hmm. So hopefully people will enjoy them as well as part of an experience of backing the comic.
No, that's great. That's great. Well, thank you for coming on, Monty. I really appreciate you reaching out to me and taking the time. Again, it's Monty Nero. It's on Kickstarter. It's called Frenemies. What was the full title again? Frenemies?
Frenemies, The Lost Planet.
The Lost Planet. And it looks great. I mean, it looks fantastic and it looks charming. And I cannot wait to read the whole thing once you finally fund. So that'll be great. And
thank you.
Yeah. And this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that fun social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
Part-time fanboy.com.